Good evening, and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, August 29th, 2016. Riek Machar is discharged from a Sudanese hospital.
Yes, he was discharged yesterday, and actually improved. The situation is stable.
And the families of detained former WOW officials call on the government to release their loved ones.
We are surviving on baking bread and cake and sell them out. No one is coming and ask about our situation after the detention of our father.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Former South Sudan First Vice President Riek Machar has been discharged from a hospital in Khartoum, where he was receiving medical care for injuries sustained while fleeing last month's violence in South Sudan's capital, Juba. The Sudanese Minister of Information, Ahmed Bilal, in Khartoum, says SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar was discharged from the Al Amal Hospital yesterday, describing his condition as stable. Bilal says Machar will need at least 2 days to recover before he regains his strength.
Yes, he was discharged yesterday, and actually improved. The situation is stable, but he's still very weak. He needs some sort of few days to be completely all right. And after that, he can live where he likes.
Last week, Bilal confirmed that Machar was brought to Sudan in serious condition and underwent care for a leg injury and chest infection. Bilal had said Machar was in, quote, very bad condition from injuries sustained while walking for 15 days from his hideout in South Sudan to the Democratic Republic of Congo. The former South Sudan First Vice President went into hiding hours after fighting broke out in Juba between SPLM forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those who support Machar. A week ago, Machar and a small group that included his wife escaped to the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was later transported to Khartoum to receive what officials there describe as urgent medical care. Bilal did not provide further detail on Machar's condition or the type of treatment Machar received at the hospital. VOA fellow Nadia Taha prepared this report in Washington. Festus Mahai, the chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, the group charged with overseeing the South Sudan peace agreement, told the Associated Press yesterday that he supports the contested appointment of Taban Dengai. The first vice president of South Sudan, who came to power after Machar went into hiding last month during the violence in Juba. Mahai told the AP that the legitimacy of Deng is questionable, but diplomats have no option but to work with Deng and the government of South Sudan. Mahai's comments come a few days after U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told reporters in Nairobi that legally, the peace agreement paves the way for the replacement of the position of the first vice president. Quote, and that has been effected with the appointment of a new first vice president, end quote. Speaking to CCTV, presidential spokesman Atenua Katen said his government is following the peace agreement signed last year. And Taban Dengai is the first vice president of South Sudan and commander-in-chief of the opposition forces. Atenge said his government, alongside First Vice President Deng, is working to bring the warring sides together and to silence the guns. Over the weekend, some media outlets had reported that IGAD's chairman said that Machar must be reinstated as First Vice President. Those reports have not been confirmed. Mahai told the AP that they are continuing to negotiate with Machar's SPLM-IO faction, adding that there is a potential that there will be two SPLM-IO forces in negotiations. Family members of former WOW State Governor Elias Wayanyapuch and his deputy, Andrea Dominic, are appealing to President Salva Kiir to release the two former leaders or try them in a court of law. Samira Dominic, wife of Andrea Dominic, says officials have not allowed her husband to see a doctor for more than 6 months, despite his deteriorating health. Michael Atit has this report for VOA from Juba.
Samira Dominic says since security forces arrested her husband more than 6 months ago, she and other family members of her have struggled to earn a living from their bread baking business. Dominic says she has no idea of when her husband will be released. Speaking in Arabic, Dominic says she cannot manage to take care of her 28 family members without her husband.
We are surviving on baking bread and cake and sell them out. No one is coming and ask about our situation after the detention of our father. So I can't sit idle. So I have to do that so we can get our daily bread.
Former Deputy Governor Andrea Dominic has been under detention since February for alleged failing to control the violence that left dozens of people killed and thousands of others displaced from their homes in Wau Town. Samira Dominic says her husband has not received any medical care and no doctor has seen him since his arrest and worries about his health condition.
I do visit him and I just decided to take some medicine for him from my own prescription for diseases like malaria, typhoid, ulcers and blood pressure. Now he has developed hemorrhoids. Until now, we did not get any medicine for him.
Dominic is appealing to President Kiir to release her husband to let him try it in a court if there is any legitimate charge against him. Sarah Iliaswaya, the daughter of the detained former governor of Wau State, is also appealing to the national government officials to release her father as soon as possible. She says his health condition is not good.
I just want to the government to release my dad as soon as possible because he has a blood pressure. And at the same time, there are no charges against him so far, and he was kept there for 3 months almost.
Governor Waya was fired in June and shortly afterward detained for alleged failing to control deadly violence in Wau Town. Presidential spokesperson Ateny Wek Ateny says he is not aware of the detention of the two former officials.
I have no idea. If they were to write, they will not write to me. They will write to the concerned authorities, not me. I have no idea completely. How do I have idea when are they going to be released? When in actual fact, I have no idea how they got even detained.
An investigating committee headed by the National Minister of Health, Ria Guy Cock, alleged that the violence in Wau was caused by the mistrust between the governor and his security agents. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
Dozens of women selling fish in Bor say they have abandoned their businesses after the town mayor enforced an order to lower the price of fish. Bor Mayor Akim Ajeth Bun ordered traders to cut the price of a kilogram of fresh fish from 80 to 30 South Sudanese pounds, a decision many sellers say has hurt their already small profit margin. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Bor.
In June, dozens of women welcomed the operation of a new fish market near the Nile River in Bor that was constructed by the United Nations Mission in South Sudan. The market was supposed to improve hygiene and works and make work easy for the women who had been selling fish on the bar floor. Dozens of women brought fish from the fishermen and would resell it to local customers. But earlier this month, Mayor Ajeth banned the businesswomen from buying fresh and dry fish and reselling it to the market. He also ordered traders to reduce the prices of a kilogram of fresh fish from 80 to 30 South Sudanese pounds. Hamet Ibrahim owns a restaurant in Bor. He says following Mayor Ajeth's order, he has noticed a shortage of fish in the market. He says he no longer serves fish at his restaurant despite a demand for it from our customers. Speaking in Arabic, he says some customers no longer come to his restaurant because they do not see fish on the menu.
If officials come here and find you selling fish, they ask where did you get this fish from. And that is why you don't see any fish here. So it is now almost a month that we are not selling fish. Some customers come and ask us whether we have fish, but when we tell them there is no fish, they just leave.
Ajesa admits that his administration barred women from selling fish in Bor in order to prevent fish prices from rising. He accused the women of causing the increase in fish prices by acting as middlemen between the fish and fish customers. Even though inflation has increased, many food prices too skyrocketing.
These are the women who go to places like Jarong and Malualichar, and they go and buy the fish at 50 South Sudanese pounds, and they come and sell it here at 400 South Sudanese pounds. So we found them actually that they were cheating people, and they were the ones who put the prices of the fish up in board. So we have decided actually to stop them now on the temporary basis.
Bor resident Abraham Lake does not blame the woman selling fish or the traders, but the country's bad economy.
This economic issue is not for one good. It is affecting everyone, and every price being affected. So we cannot blame them, but still we must come in and sit and find a solution.
The deputy director of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Jonglei State, James Jok Alier, says donors who built the new fish market to improve the life of local women will be disappointed to find the women have now abandoned it because of the mayor's new order.
We invest those money there to see to it that the money invested in that center can change the life of the women group. We can be very happy to see to it that the women group who were doing that business in that area are performing well. But if they are not doing business in that area, we cannot be happy.
A local organization called Human Development Consortium built the market with the help of UNIMIS for about $5,000. The market is spent in and divided into several chills, which were designed to be used by up to 40 fish sellers, all of whom have been women. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Rio 2016 Summer Olympic Games have ended, but South Sudanese Olympic athletes say they are already thinking about the 2020 Games. More on that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you encourage teamwork in your workplace?
What I can do to encourage teamwork is also to change the mindset of people and tell them that if you want to go quickly, you will go alone. But if you want to reach very fast or to do many things, you will go with others. So it is about teaching them and showing that teamwork is very important than working alone.
When people are working together, they earn more. So teamworking also have advantages. So I encourage my neighbor to work together.
It's better we work together, so share ideas and they accept our mistakes to everyone who has that problem.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Here in the United States, members of the Standing Rock Native American community are leading a protest against the construction of a $3.8 billion oil pipeline, which will run across four states in the Midwest. If constructed, the pipeline would cut right through the Missouri River, which indigenous communities say would put their communities at risk of pollution and all kinds of water restrictions. The Patokan Native American community in the Midwestern state of Nebraska are one of a handful of Native American groups that have come together to protest the construction of the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline. Protesters say the pipeline will introduce environmental dangers and displace several local Native American communities. South Sudanese native Nyamal Tutdiel, who worked as a project coordinator for the Ponca tribe of Nebraska, says the Native American community where she lives in the Midwest believe they are fighting for their livelihoods.
I get emotional talking about it because as an indigenous person, as an indigenous woman, like, this is not the Native American fight alone. This is a humanity fight. I mean, you can think of it, you know, 75% of our bodies are made of water.
The 1,150-mile-long pipeline is designed to transport some 450 barrels of oil per day and is expected to pump at least 570,000 barrels or more when it's at full capacity. The pipeline is proposed to run across North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and Illinois. A report by the U.S. government's Department of Fish and Wildlife Service acknowledged that a spill or a leak of hazardous liquids during construction could create long-term impacts on water quality. But the government agency says they plan to avoid those accidents by using proper design and implementing best management practices. That promise is not enough for Tutdiel and thousands of other protesters who fear the oil pipeline could harm what is most important to them.
Water is sacred. Water is everything. Water is life. Corporate America, it's choosing money over people's life because, again, if this pipeline is built, there's not 100% guarantee that it won't leak, it won't erupt.
Protesting amid large government construction projects here in the Midwest is not a foreign concept to Sudanese populations. In Sudan's northern state, the proposed Kajbar and Dal dams were met with outrage by residents who fear the dams could disrupt several archaeological sites that date back to more than 7,000 years. Tutdiel, who grew up nearby in Lincoln, Nebraska, says the Native American community is working to sustain its culture and identity by protesting the pipeline. She says her tribe, the Ponca of Nebraska, will not be directly impacted by the construction of the pipeline, but that is not stopping them from joining the protests with other Native American communities. The U.S. Department of Fish and Wildlife Service says that a pipeline is safer and a more economical alternative to transporting crude oil across several states by truck. But the Native American tribes disagree, saying the pipeline, which is slated to run across the Missouri River, would exploit their ancestral lands and restrict their water supply. Construction of large government-funded projects that displace local populations, including four proposed dams in Sudan, have prompted locals to also speak out against the potential disruption the dams could cause. Tutdiel sees similarities with the proposed pipeline in the U.S.
Still, that is not a solution. That is not a solution at all, because even anything bad happens there, it's still going to affect the land and the water source.
Some 30 protesters have been arrested in recent weeks in the U.S. A federal lawsuit brought by the Standing Rock Sioux tribe has asked a judge to stop construction of the pipeline. It could take a few more weeks for the judge to rule on whether the pipeline construction should continue or to grant an injunction that would put construction on hold. About 3,000 people from nearly 13 countries have gathered in Stockholm for the annual World Water Week Summit. This year's theme is Water for Sustainable Growth. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The Stockholm International Water Institute is hosting the summit, calling 2016 a critical year for addressing the role of water in development. The meeting follows the adoption of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, and the historic Paris Climate Change Agreement. Anton Earl is director of the Institute's Africa Regional Center, based in Pretoria, South Africa.
All other efforts to promote development would really come to nothing if we aren't supplying the water that is needed. I mean, any development intervention you can think of, whether it's in healthcare, in education, in agriculture.
He explains why it's difficult to provide children with a good education without clean water.
You have schools being built across Africa where governments are really getting to grips with the education backlog, and then these schools not having a secure water supply. And because they don't have a secure water supply, they very frequently don't have adequate sanitation. The net result is that especially girls are not going to school because of this.
Despite the strong link between clean water and development, making the issue a priority at international climate talks has been difficult.
Essentially, climate change is all caused by changes in the atmosphere of the planet. We know that, you know, changes in the makeup of carbon, methane, other greenhouse gases that are impacting the atmosphere. So that's well known. But the way that climate change will impact the world will, of course, be through water, the flow of water through the atmosphere, the increase in evaporation, the changes in hydrology, changes in runoff that will occur.
The Stockholm International Water Institute official says it's easier to create business models for the energy and telecommunication industries than it is for water.
Water is different. You know, water's got this connotation of being a human right. As soon as you start moving too strongly towards private sector engagement and the implication that a private company might make profit from supplying water, it becomes very politically contentious. There's no easy answer to this, and you always have to be looking at the issues around access and equity. So that could be part of the problem.
Working in Africa, Earl has found the continent has its own particular challenges in using water for development. He says it's not doing what it needs to do, and that is invest about $9 billion a year in water infrastructure. This includes dams, urban water systems, water treatment and sanitation systems.
So this is a huge backlog, larger than any other region in the world. In many other parts of the world, the issue is more around how do you more effectively manage the infrastructure that exists today. In Africa, yes, that is part of the equation. However, you also have a really big backlog just in new infrastructure that does need to be built.
Also, he says computer models show large parts of Africa will be among the hardest hit by climate change. In other words, more frequent and more severe droughts and floods.
Affecting communities, but also affecting cities and the ability of cities to provide secure water services to their residents. And of course, as we know, Africa is one of the fastest urbanizing parts of the world today. Some of the most rapidly growing cities in the world are located on the African continent.
World Water Week organizers say the meeting aims to support SDG number 8, which is to promote sustained, inclusive and sustainable growth, full and productive employment, and decent work for all. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
A South Sudanese athlete who participated at the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil this month, is calling on the South Sudan government to do more to support athletes for the next Olympic Games. Santino Kenyi, who flew to Rio to compete in the men's 1500-meter race, says Olympic athletes from South Sudan were not prepared to compete on the world stage. As Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba, sports officials say they will work to ensure that athletes are better prepared ahead of the 2020 Olympics.
This year, South Sudan participated for the first time ever in the Olympics, a big excitement to South Sudanese nationwide. South Sudan's flag was raised in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil on August 4th by Vice President James Waniga, who accompanied the three South Sudanese athletes. Neither Margaret Rumat Hassan, who competed in the 200-meter women's race, nor Santino Kenyi, who competed in the 1500-meter men's race, made it beyond the qualifying round. Gor Mariel participated in the men's marathon, which did not have a qualifying round. Kenyi says he is hopeful that with more financial support, South Sudanese athletes will have a better showing in the 2020 Olympics.
Our challenges are really there, and we know we will overcome them in South Sudan. Like the track we don't have in South Sudan. And also, we went here, we did not prepare ourselves well when we are going for the competition. So I'm going to start my training from now, but I need also support. Like the shoes, like the clothes. Yeah, this thing has to be there, because when you come from the training, you have to change. So you have to eat well, you train well, you see, and you sleep in the right time. That is what is called training.
Kenyi says the South Sudan Olympics Committee should transport athletes to the highlands of Kenya or Ethiopia for better training. South Sudan Olympic Committee President Wilson Deng says, although none of the athletes medaled, the Olympics competition was not all in vain.
Our athletes got exposed. And I'm sure they will have a very good training. I would also announce it to Athletics Federation that one of your athletes has been invited by Italian Athletic Federation to go there for a visit.
Atong the march of the Japan International Cooperation Agency, or JICA, which has supported the government of South Sudan in various sectors since its independence in 2011, says Japan will continue to support South Sudanese athletes.
This is not the end. As you all know, Olympic 2020 is coming and it's going to be in Japan. And on behalf of JICA, I'd like to reconfirm that JICA is very committed to support South Sudan team. And then also for the 2020 Olympic, the government of Japan has just launched a project called Sport for Tomorrow. And under this project, South Sudan will also be included in it.
The International Olympic Committee recognized South Sudan as a member nation in August 2015, despite the country's ongoing conflict. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
Here's a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Ayan. Riek Machar is out of the hospital. He was being treated at a hospital in Khartoum last week for injuries sustained while escaping from Juba during last month's deadly fighting. That is, Sudanese Minister of Information Ahmed Bilal says SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar was discharged from the Al Amal Hospital yesterday and described his condition as stable. He says he'll need at least a couple of days to recover before he regains his strength. He did not divulge Machar's location or the exact nature of his illnesses or injuries. Last week, Bilal confirmed Machar underwent care for a leg injury and a chest infection. The former South Sudan First Vice President went into hiding just hours after fighting broke out in Juba between SPLM forces loyal to President Kiir and those who support Machar. Festus Muhai, the chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, or JMEC, the group charged with overseeing the South Sudan peace deal, told the Associated Press yesterday that he supports the contested appointment of Taban Dengai, the first vice president now of South Sudan. Muhai calls Deng's first vice presidency questionable, but says diplomats have no choice at this point but to work with Deng and the government of South Sudan. Last week, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told reporters in Nairobi that legally the peace deal paves the way for the replacement of the position of the first vice president, quote, and that has been effected with the appointment of a new vice president, end quote. And finally, family members of former Wau State Governor Elias Waya Niapuch and his deputy Andrea Dominic are asking President Kiir to free the two former leaders or try them in a court of law. The wife of Andrea Dominic says officials have not allowed her husband to see a doctor for more than 6 months despite his deteriorating health. Samira Dominic says since security forces arrested her husband, she and other family members have struggled to earn a living from their bread-baking business. Dominic says she cannot take care of her 28 family members without her husband. She says her family survives on baking bread and cakes and selling them to the public. She says no government official has ever come to ask them about their situation after her husband was detained. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, Carol. And that's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Get Up by South Sudanese artist Emmanuel Jal.
Yeah. Say all walk and no play makes me a dull boy, but you know what I say? I gotta get up. Sometimes I feel like my life just ain't mine. I'm living out of my suitcase from one place to another place. Hey, I get a chance sometimes. I make a few dollars sometimes. I'm thinking I deserve a night in the town, having fun with my friends around. Hey, I gotta get up.
We've been listening to rap artist Emmanuel Jal with the song Get Up. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.